Welcome to the Science Signaling Podcast for September 22nd, 2015. I'm Annalisa VanHook, and in this podcast, I'll be talking with Lois Smith and Ye Sun about how a protein that suppresses cytokine signaling prevents retinal neovascularization in mice. Retinal neovascularization is the abnormal growth of blood vessels in the retina, and it's a common cause of blindness in diabetics and in preterm infants. Research suggests that crosstalk between the normal blood vessels that serve the retina and the neurons, glial cells, and photoreceptors that make up the retina are what drive retinal neovascularization. New work from Lois Smith's group at Harvard Medical School and Boston Children's Hospital has revealed that a protein called SOX3 prevents retinal neovascularization in mice because it keeps the neural and glial cells of the retina from releasing too much VEGF, which is a cytokine that stimulates blood vessel formation. Smith and Son spoke to me from Boston Children's Hospital. Dr. Smith and Dr. Son, welcome to the Science Signaling Podcast.
Thank you.
Lois, what causes retinal neovascularization?
It's a common mechanism in many diseases where abnormal blood vessel growth causes vision loss. And the cause is basically that there are different ways of blood vessels stopping growth or actually regressing, creating a hypoxic or a nutritionally deficient retina, which then sends out signals for new blood vessels, which unfortunately are not developed properly, but these neovessels are leaky and cause retinal detachment.
How is retinal neovascularization treated today?
There are two fundamentally different ways that it's treated. The first is by physically ablating the retina with either laser, or it used to be cryotherapy, where you destroyed the tissue that causes the release of factors. The second way that's come into vogue more recently is by using anti-VEGF treatment, which blocks the utilization of VEGF to cause the neovascularization. So the anti-VEGF antibodies are used to block the VEGF response.
VEGF is a growth factor that stimulates the production of blood vessels.
Yes. The difficulty with using the anti-VEGF antibodies is that VEGF is also required for normal vascular development. So if the dose is too high, then you can actually prevent normal vascularization as well as inhibiting neovascularization.
So I have a quick question, though, about the treatment where you laser ablate or cryoablate the retina to treat neovascularization? Do they ablate the whole retina? I mean, wouldn't that cause blindness in itself, the treatment?
Yes, it does. You don't ablate the whole retina. You try to ablate, for example, in the case of retinopathy of prematurity, you ablate in the peripheral retina, but you ablate all of the retina that's not well vascularized in the peripheral retina. And indeed, it causes peripheral vision loss. And similarly, in diabetic retinopathy, you can ablate most of the peripheral retina, which again causes visual field defects, which is not optimal, which is why anti-VEGF therapy has been embraced so vigorously, because it offers the possibility of stopping the neovascularization without destroying retina.
You use a model in which you induce retinal neovascularization in mice. Can you tell us a little bit more about the model?
Yes. In both diabetic retinopathy and retinopathy of prematurity, there are two phases of the disease process. In the first phase, there's vessel loss or cessation of normal vascular development. And in the case of diabetic retinopathy, the first phase is caused by hyperglycemia. And in the case of retinopathy of prematurity, it's caused in part by high levels of oxygen. This model is similar to retinopathy of prematurity in that we put mice into high oxygen and prevent the normal vascular development, and we also ablate the normal vessels that are there. This creates a hypoxic retina when the mice are brought back out of oxygen into room air. And the hypoxic retina sends out signals, including vascular endothelial growth factor, or VEGF, that stimulates abnormal blood vessel growth. these proliferative vessels that are leaky and that cause retinal detachment and blindness.
So when you bring the mice back to normal oxygen concentrations that triggers this VEGF-dependent neovascularization in the eye, how is SOX3 preventing neovascularization?
In this model,
Yesun,
SOX3 was induced because of a hypoxia, then bind to the JAK kinase and then inhibit STAT3 transcription activity. So actively, the STAT3 will move to the nuclear and start to transcribe downstream genes. So those downstream genes include SOX3 and VEGF. So the SOX3 then will enter a negative feedback loop, which is a SOX3, JAK, STAT3, and maintain stable levels of STAT3 targeted genes. And once SOX3 was knocked out in neurons and the glials, then the negative feedback loop was disrupted. And then STAT3 get hyperactive and produce a lot of VEGF, so then cause neurovascularization.
So the SOX3 is important in the neurons and the glial cells of the retina, and it's in those cells that it prevents the release of VEGF?
Yes. So the SOX3 will control the STAT3 activity in the neuron and glial cells.
Is SOX3 normally always expressed in the retinal neurons and the glia?
In the wild-type mice, the SOX3 expression is maintained at a minimal level, but in the wild-type oxygen-induced retinopathy mouse model, the SOX3 was induced. And then once the SOX3 was induced, they will initiate a SOX3 JAK STAT3 negative feedback loop. They will maintain the VEGF levels. So in the oxygen-induced retinopathy, the VEGF also will be upregulated in the phase 2, which is a neurovascularization phase. But in the SOX3 knockout mice, the VEGF level was controlled by the STAT. The first phase on the normal mice, the VEGF level will be controlled with the HIF and alpha. So if we target the SOX3 for the therapeutic purpose, that will be only target actual VEGF without dampen the normal vessel growth.
Does understanding how SOX3 protects the retina from neovascularization help us better understand ways to treat retinal neovascularization or to prevent it? Does it change how we think about treating the disease?
Yes, it does. As I mentioned earlier, if we suppress VEGF too vigorously, we will suppress normal vascular growth. So the use of anti-VEGF antibodies is very powerful, but it's also worrisome, particularly in the case of retinopathy of prematurity, because it leaks into the systemic circulation, and it suppresses blood vessel development in the brain, in the gut, and in the entire body. So it carries with it some real downsides. So if instead of directly suppressing VEGF, we can modulate it and suppress the excess VEGF rather than all VEGF, then we have a better way of controlling neovascularization. And that's what SOX3 control offers us the possibility of doing. So in this paper, we found that by controlling SOX3, we could control the excess VEGF production, not the entire VEGF production, but that was enough to control the neovascular response. So I think it is a different way of looking at how to control neovascularization in eye diseases.
Are there drugs one could use to mimic the effects of SOX3?
At the moment, there are none that are readily available and FDA approved, but we're hoping to develop some.
Yay and Lois, thanks for speaking with me.
Well, thank you for having us.
It's good to be with you.
That was Yay Sun and Lois Smith discussing a paper published in the September 22nd issue of Science Signaling by Sun and colleagues. You can read that article online at stke.sciencemag.org. The Science Signaling Podcast is a production of Science Signaling and the American Association for the Advancement of Science, advancing science, serving society. If you have any comments or questions, you can write to us at sciencesignalingeditors@aaas.org. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and on behalf of Science Signaling and AAAS, Thanks for listening.